Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 138 event, which takes place in Denver, Colorado. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, Kyle Marley lost 1.7 units for UFC 230 with his 1-unit free bet on Chris Weidman at minus 170 odds. Kyle has his bets and fantasy MMA picks available now on MMAoddsbreaker.com. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 139 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a bantamweight contest between Mark De La Rosa, who is 10-1, and Joby Sanchez, who is 11-3. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
De La Rosa opened minus 185, the comeback on Sanchez at plus 145. Right now at our sponsored sportsbook, betdsi.eu, it is currently De La Rosa sitting at minus 250, the comeback at plus 195 on Sanchez. So line margins have tightened up, more action coming in De La Rosa's way. Sanchez not getting the love in this spot here. Joby Sanchez overall, I think from the MMA bettors in general, he gets a little bit of respect, but not really somebody that they're going after at the betting window. And I think what we've seen so far from De La Rosa has been a little bit more impressive, especially him being the more well-rounded mixed martial artist. Now, don't get me wrong. Sanchez, I think, has put in the time. He's put in the work for sure, training at a good camp, having all that experience in the UFC, the first stint, then, you know, making the contender series and getting back in the, on the UFC roster here for the second run. Sanchez is a very solid fighter, hard to take down. His best attribute is definitely the striking aspect of things. He's got decent takedown defense, although that's been his kryptonite as well. And again, I think most people are thinking that he's going to be exploited on the ground here by De La Rosa. De La Rosa, a spark plug in his own right, very well-rounded. He's got a wrestling background, grappling background. He could strike on the feet as well. But in this particular spot, for sure, his advantage is going to be on the ground, and that's where he's going to try to exploit Sanchez once again in this matchup. So what you have here are two well-rounded, capable fighters. I mean, guys that study the game well and are smart as far as IQ goes, and I think we're going to see a heck of a fight. But I do lean a little bit more towards De La Rosa because of what most of us think. And again, I think that De La Rosa does find his spot on the ground and probably takes advantage of that. And I think he's got pretty slick submissions. I know in his UFC debut, it didn't fare that well for De La Rosa. He lost to Tim Elliott and he got choked out. But I mean, different type of matchup, different type of fight here. I think De La Rosa, like I said, leaps and bounds ahead of Sanchez, still on the ground here. But if this fight can stay upright and De La Rosa cannot get this fight to the ground, I think Sanchez is going to have a lot of success in this matchup. I think he's the better overall, more well-versed striker in this spot as well. So I think that he will find success. So De La Rosa has to get this fight to the ground, in my opinion, to at least get the nod as far as the judges' scorecards go or possibly get the finish here along the way as well. If not, it's going to be a tough, tough fight for him. So I slightly lean towards De La Rosa. As far as the odds go, I would not lay that price. I think it's going to be – there's a chance it's a lot more competitive than this, even though both fighters are stepping in on short notice, especially Sanchez in this spot. I still think that that price right now is a little bit too high. So it's probably a dog or pass situation, more likely a pass. Stay away from it. Watch an exciting fight, and hopefully it's a fun fight. So the pick is De La Rosa to get the W here.
Yeah, Joby Sanchez is a guy that definitely earned his way back into the UFC with impressive performances on a Tuesday Night Contender Series as well as outside the UFC. But, I mean, that first run did not go so great for him with getting taken down in both of his losses 10 times combined. And then in his return to the UFC, takes on Roberto Sanchez, a guy that I'll admit does have a very good ground game. But got taken down 3 times in the first round and got submitted. So I think that Mark De La Rosa has about as good takedown offense in terms of wrestling as Roberto Sanchez. And while Joby Sanchez has a very good striking game, and he should have the edge against De La Rosa. My concern is that that takedown defense is going to fail Sanchez, and he'll get put on his back, and it'll stay that way. I'm going to side with Mark De La Rosa here. I think him being the significantly better ground fighter is going to pay off. De La Rosa has the majority of his career wins due to his elite ground game, and I think that he takes Sanchez down and either keeps him down to win a decision or definitely has the ability to submit Joby Sanchez. So my pick is going to be Mark De La Rosa. Now dropping down to the flyweight division, we have Joseph Morales, who is 9-1, taking on Eric Shelton, who is 11-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Shelton opened minus 140, the comeback on Morales at even money, and right now it's Shelton minus 125 over at BetDSI, the comeback on Morales at minus 105. This is a type of fight that flipped back and forth, a lot of action coming in both ways, a lot of early action coming in Morales. I mean, he's definitely the more popular fighter. I think even though he's only had a couple UFC fights, I mean, the hype around Morales has been there, of course, training with Alpha Male for a while. So, I mean, the guy has a lot of high expectations coming in. And unfortunately for Shelton on the other side of it, I mean, I think he's a very quality fighter. It's just he hasn't had the success in the UFC. I mean, he's lost most of his fights in the UFC. He's only had one win so far and I believe three losses. So he's better than that. He's faced really solid competition in the UFC. His last fight against Perez, another tough one, man. I mean, Perez, you know, is just a high caliber quality fighter at 125 pounds as well. So, I think Shelton is just right underneath those guys as, in terms of, you know, being right there in potential contention for a title shot. Now, of course, the UFC, we'll see what they're going to do with the flyweight division. I guess they dissolved it right now, but who knows the craziness, a lot of rumors floating around. We'll see what happens and where some of these fighters go. But in this case here, I think it'll be a good fight. And I think Shelton probably is going to get underrated in this spot as well. I think Morales is the more dangerous fighter of the two here. I think he's more capable of getting a finish, but Shelton's the better grinder. I think Shelton's the more steady fighter. I think Shelton's the more dependable fighter. I think he's got better defense, whether it's on the feet or on the ground as well, submission wise. Now that said, and I think Morales definitely is capable and he's got some pretty decent sub defense as well, but offensively, that's where he excels at the most. I mean, Morales has sneaky good chokes. He's got those long limbs where he can get you in trouble with triangle chokes, arm bars and that sort of thing on the ground. A top position, he has some good ground and pound as well. On the feet, he's got power enough to, you know, do some damage and knock you out, of course, as well. But outside of that, I think stylistically, this is a tough matchup for him because I think Shelton will win the wrestling battle. And if he gets on top, I think his submission defense is good enough to not get caught up in Morales' submission game. But needless to say, Shelton can keep it upright as well. And if he does have the striking advantage in this fight. I think Shelton can mix things up a little bit more. I think he's a little bit more technical. And again, I think he's a little bit more sound defensively as well. So in my opinion, this is Shelton's fight to win or lose. And I think it's an easier fight, even though Morales is dangerous and he's a finisher. It's not the type of fighter he's going to face that he's been losing to the last few fights with these wrestlers that have been kind of grinding him out and taking him down and just kind of made an ugly but tough fight in that regard. I think this fight, it'll be Shelton's fight to dictate, and I think he can have more success doing so. So even though there's a lot of hype around Morales, and I think he's a legit fighter and he'll only get better at age 24, I think finally Shelton's going to come in here and he's going to shine and get the W here. So I am going to pick Shelton to get the win over Morales.
And I'm in agreement. Morales is a very talented fighter. I mean, the guy has legitimate, excellent Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu credentials, and he has some power on the feet. But I do think that he still has a long way to go to really sharpen those skills and become a more overall well-rounded fighter, put it all together. You saw it in the debut against Roberto Sanchez. He clipped Sanchez early. Sanchez isn't the best striker. So Morales took advantage of that, stepped in, landed a big shot, and then that set up eventually a submission in the first round. It was a really impressive UFC debut. But the second time we saw him against a more savvy UFC veteran in Davison Figueiredo, a guy that is an extremely talented flyweight in the division who still hasn't lost. You know, he got completely manhandled. I mean, it was just destruction, basically. Figueiredo was just so much better than him. And while I don't think Shelton is on Figueiredo's level, Shelton has the overall skill set that could give Morales some fits. Morales, while he does have some power on the feet, he's not that technical. I think Shelton is better offensively in terms of output with his striking. Shelton is better with his accuracy. Shelton is better defensively. So, I mean, he's got Morales just about everywhere except maybe pure punching power on the feet. Now, on the ground, Morales should have the edge if it does go to the canvas, and especially if Shelton gets put on his back. Morales has that spectacular jiu-jitsu game. But Shelton has relatively decent takedown defense. I think his takedown defense numbers are a little skewed because he faced two really good wrestlers that took him down repeatedly. But for the most part, against everybody else, it's been Shelton that's been the aggressor looking for takedowns. And I don't think Morales is quite on that same level as like a Jared Brooks or an Alex Smith in terms of a wrestling ability. So if Shelton can keep this fight upright or at least stay off of his back for extended periods of time, I think that he wins stand-up exchanges. I think he outpoints Morales. And I think that while Morales is definitely still a young fighter on the rise, I don't think that he's overtaken Shelton at this point. So I think this is actually a favorable matchup for Eric Shelton, and I expect Shelton to outpoint Morales to a decision victory. Would be 5 for 5 for decisions for Shelton in the UFC, and I think it keeps going that way, and I think he actually ekes this one out. Now moving on to the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card, we have a lightweight contest between Devontae Smith, who is 8-1, and Julian Arosa, who is 22-6. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
This fight opened exactly pick a -120 Arosa, -120 Smith. And right now what we're seeing over at BetDSI is Smith coming in at -230, the comeback on Arosa at +190. So needless to say, the action coming in Smith's way. A lot of hype, a lot of respect coming in Smith's way. Of course, his contender series performance, man, watching him fight, that was definitely impressive. He ended up getting the knockout win first round, and I mean, just in devastating fashion. I mean, you could tell what kind of athlete this guy is, what kind of power, what kind of speed, what kind of fighter, and what kind of potential he has. I mean, Smith, training at Factory X now, he's only improving, age 25. I mean, the guy is definitely getting better fight by fight compared to some of early fights that you could find and see on in footage or whatnot, and see some of the wins and his progression. I know a lot of people are going to point out to the Gunther loss as kind of a stain on his resume, but man, since that Gunther fight, if you look, he's faced some decent opposition, you know, outside of the UFC before he made his contender series debut or whatnot, and he started to get better. You could see the improvements. So I think Smith is one of those guys that sky's the limit, really. I mean, under the tutelage of Factory X now, I think with all those good, solid training partners, the guy's confidence is rising, and he's only going to improve. Now, that said, he's facing definitely the toughest test of his career in Arosa. Arosa is one of those guys that, of course, you know, he had a stint on the Ultimate Fighter in his own right, and he had some success. I thought he was one of these guys that was one of the more well-rounded fighters from that season. I mean, the guy has pretty good stand-up. He's got a good jiu-jitsu game. He's got decent wrestling. I mean, he's just a total package, and he's faced some really solid competition. And then, since he got cut from the UFC, unfortunately, when he did suffer that loss, when he was in his first stint to Ishihara, I believe, he ended up getting knocked out. That was, you know, a couple years back now, of course. He did go outside of the UFC, and he faced really solid competition, and he was impressive. I mean, you could see his development and his improvement, his confidence level. So Eros is one of these guys that you cannot take lightly. He doesn't look like he's going to have a ton of power on the feet, but his technique and his power is definitely slick enough to cause some damage. He can beat you with his hands. He can beat you even with kicks. I mean, so the guy mixes things up really well. He's opportunistic when it comes to submission game as well. So there's a lot to like about Arosa here. So this is going to be a test for Smith, but I think it's a test Smith can pass, because if you look at Arosa's kryptonite in the past, it's guys that are explosive with some power. And Arosa, if anything, I mean, if he does have a chink to his armor, it's definitely that chin a little bit. And I think that this is a terrible matchup for him in that regard, where Smith is definitely a devastating KO artist. So I think Smith is able to keep this fight upright. I think he's going to be smart enough to control the pace of this fight and end up landing that kill shot and end up eventually taking Arosa out at some point and, you know, checking that chin. So I think that's what's going to happen here. I think it's going to be a good fight while it lasts, but I think Smith is going to eventually, you know, test that chin of Arosa and put him out. So I do think that the rise of Smith continues here, and we're going to see where he can go with this thing, man. I mean, at 155 pounds, we know it's a shark tank in the UFC, but if Smith can continue to round out his game and get better on the ground and continue to improve his stand-up game, man, sky's the limit for him. So the pick, in my opinion here, is Devontae Smith to get the W.
Yeah, Devontae Smith has definitely been on a meteoric rise. I mean, earlier this year during the Arnold's Expo in Columbus, where, you know, they have a big bodybuilding thing that goes on each year, they had an MMA event, and Devontae Smith fought in the main event against former UFC fighter Justin Edwards, and he just killed Justin Edwards, knocked him out in about 90 seconds. And I think watching that fight, I was like, oh, this guy looks like he's ready for the UFC. And then he gets on the Tuesday Night Contender Series, smashes his way through that, and then here he is. Now, granted, you know, this is a little bit short notice for everything, but I think Devontae Smith is definitely ready. Now, Julian Arosa is a guy that, you know, I was not that impressed by when he was on The Ultimate Fighter, but, you know, more power to him, just like Joby Sanchez. You know, after a rough stint in the UFC, he bounced back, fought well outside the UFC, and then performed pretty well on Tuesday Night Contender Series to get another opportunity. But this is a really bad matchup. Arosa does well against guys that don't have a lot of power, guys that don't have a lot of athleticism and really good quickness. And I think that Devontae Smith has all three of those things. Smith can step in and just crack. I mean, almost all of his wins are by knockout. He's 8-1, and I think 7 of them are by knockout or TKO. And he's on a huge knockout streak. And Arosa does not have a particularly great chin. And I just think, maybe if Smith can't put Arosa away, Arosa can take over as this fight wears on, because he does have a pretty good conditioning, and he is pretty well rounded. He might be able to get this fight to the ground, might be able to drag it into deep waters. But if that doesn't happen, I think there's actually a pretty good chance that Smith just takes Arosa out in the first minute or two, just because that's just the style of fighter that he is. Very aggressive, very powerful, very dangerous. So if Arosa isn't careful, he could be finished very quickly, and I think that's actually what's going to happen. So my pick is Devontae Smith by first round knockout. Now, sticking with the lightweight division, we have Davy Ramos, who is 8-2, taking on John Gunther, who is 7-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Ramos opens -445, the comeback on Gunther at +315. And right now, it wasn't enough, as right now you're seeing Ramos all the way up at -1045 for the comeback on Gunther at +645. So line skyrocketed up. And you know what? Stylistically, I mean, it makes sense in a lot of ways, because Gunther is a tough guy, man. I mean, that's one thing I got to respect out of the gate. The guy is the type of fighter that lays it all on the line. Definitely, he's tough as nails. He's a bit out there as far as the Ultimate Fighter. If you watch a show and you watch his lifestyle, he's not definitely, I want to say he's a unique personality, put it that way. I mean, he's not your typical average American MMA fighter, that's for sure. I mean, but that being said, I mean, the guy definitely has, as far as toughness goes, grinding style, some power, you know, some experience, some solid experience training at a good camp. I mean, the guy definitely has the heart and the discipline and the desire to do well in MMA. But unfortunately for him in this spot here, I think it's a nightmare matchup. And obviously the early action dictates that as well. And a lot of people realize that's the case here. That's why they came in on Ramos. I mean, here's the thing. Gunther's stand-up, it's okay. I don't even want to say it's solid, because I think he's a bit slow on the feet. He does have some power. And again, he pushes forward. And with his heart and his desire, he does end up having some success at times. But in this case against Ramos, even though Ramos is more known for his ground game, Ramos does have some power and he does have some speed. And he's one of these jiu-jitsu guys that has really improved his stand-up game. And, you know, obviously he's got enough power to do some damage. If it stays upright, he doesn't have to get the fight on the floor. So I think with the speed and power on the feet here against Gunther, he's going to have a lot of success. So this is stylistically a bad matchup, I think, for Gunther on the feet. I think if it gets to the ground, obviously Ramos has the advantage there as well. I mean, the only thing Gunther could do here is, I think, get top position and avoid getting submitted. But I think his neck is going to get stuck somewhere if that's the case, and he gets submitted even that way. If Ramos is on his back, I think he grabs onto a neck and probably chokes him out that way. If Ramos is on top, he's going to deliver some punishment. He'll end up getting the submission finish that way as well. So there's a lot of ways Ramos can win this fight. That's why everybody went crazy betting this fight. It's a really hard fight for me to see Gunther winning here. So I think Ramos is going to have another highlight reel finish. And I mean, there's not much else to say here. I mean, minus 1,000, you got to stay away from it. There's no value either way at this point. In betting the line, I just don't see Gunther winning this fight. So it's not a dog or pass situation. I think Ramos kind of rolls here in this fight. So it is what it is. Ramos should get the win.
Yeah, styles make fights, and this is a horrific style matchup for John Gunther. I mean, the machine, as he's known, is known for getting takedowns, using his wrestling, and grinding out fights. You saw that in his, you know, it was just a majority decision win and that he had on the Ultimate Fighter 27 finale, but he got 8 takedowns in that fight to win, and it was a close win. So that just shows that when he's not getting takedowns and holding top position, you know, he really doesn't have that much to offer on the feet. Even though Devi Ramos isn't a world beater on the feet, I think that his aggression and power on the feet will make up for that. So Ramos should have the edge when they are standing and trading. Ramos has, at least thus far, shown a pretty decent striking defense, and a pretty high striking pace on the feet. And then Gunther, I mean, 8 takedowns. If he takes Ramos down, he's in big trouble because Ramos is an absolute nasty world-class Brazilian jiu-jitsu, black belt. And I think, if Gunther takes him down, it's only a matter of time before he gets submitted, whether it's getting submitted from Ramos off of his back or Ramos, transitioning and sweeping and, you know, putting him in something nasty. So, you know, how does Gunther win this fight? I don't see a lot of paths to victory. Nick mentioned maybe he can hold top position and just stall it out. But even that, because Ramos is going to be so active, I think that Gunther could even lose if he holds top position. Like the only thing I can see Gunther doing is just kind of pushing Ramos into the fence and kind of winning the position battle without this fight going to the floor, and then trying to dirty box or something. And even that might not work. So I'm going to side with Devi Ramos. He's a monster favorite on this card for a reason. And I just think, you know, whatever Gunther does, it's probably going to backfire on him. So my pick is definitely going to be Devi Ramos. Now dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Chaz Skelly, who is 17-2, taking on Bobby Moffitt, who is 12-3. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Skelly opened minus 245, the comeback on Moffitt plus 175. And right now looking over at BetDSI, it's currently Moffitt as a favorite, minus 120, the comeback on Skelly minus 110. Line flipped, early action coming in Moffitt's way. A lot of you guys out there, especially the guys that like to get in on some of the early lines that are floating around out there, hats off to you guys, because this is a card that you guys just destroyed some of those opening numbers that were fairly weak floating around out there for sure. And this is, you know, like I said, one of those examples, because Skelly opening up around 2.5 to 1 over a similar stylistic fighter in Moffitt. In fact, a fighter that you can actually say at this point of his career, even though he, you know, that he's making his official UFC debut, he's coming off the Contender Series. But at this point in his career, he might have some more upside than Skelly. I mean, Skelly's the UFC vet here, but Skelly's been the one that has been a head scratcher, in my opinion. I mean, Skelly has all sorts of skill. We know his wrestling pedigree. It's definitely solid. We know his jiu-jitsu pedigree. I mean, I think Skelly is a super dangerous fighter when it comes to his submissions and how slick he is on the ground at times, for sure. His stand-up game, he could be a threat on the feet a little bit as well. I mean, he's a little bit unorthodox at times, but he does have some power. It's just his conditioning, and he just, I don't know. He doesn't look the part of going, you know, to battle for 3 straight rounds and having, you know, keeping up that tempo for 3 rounds or, you know, being in that sort of fight. A lot of times what you'll see in Skelly is him even start off slow and then all of a sudden, you know, come from behind and get a submission win or whatnot. He just hasn't been consistent enough for me to be a believer, but he does definitely have the skill, and he's got the skill to win this fight as well. So this makes it super tough for me to pick here, because again, stylistically, these guys are very similar. Both these guys have wrestling backgrounds. Both these guys excel on the ground. And both these guys have a little bit of pop on their feet. But I trust Moffitt, even though he's making his UFC debut here. I think he's a little bit more hungry at this point. Obviously, he's coming off of a very impressive Contender Series debut win. Now, of course, outside of that Contender Series, I mean, Moffitt has pretty decent experience. Also, you know, we've seen him perform. Those of you guys that watch Access TV fights, the LFA organization, RFA organizations as well. He's fought and had some pretty good performances on those cards. So, and those cards are obviously one of the biggest feeders the UFC uses. So the Access TV fights, LFA League, CES, all those, you know, organizations is where we're getting a lot of these fighters that are coming onto the UFC. So Moffitt has some solid experience and he's capable of winning this fight as well. And I'm actually going to lean his way because I do think he's a little bit more reliable to me. He's going to be a little bit more consistent. And I think that if Skelly doesn't get rid of Moffitt to catch him early in round one, round two, as this fight progresses, I think Skelly's just going to slowly start to decline. And I think Moffitt's going to be able to exploit that and maybe possibly get a finish. If he doesn't get a finish, I think he can steal a decision here against Skelly as well. So styles make fights. I think stylistically, these guys match up really well. It's realistically a toss-up type of fight. And that's why the current number right now, where you're seeing Moffitt actually minus 120, almost exactly a pick him with a slight lean that way, I think is about right. So my pick is going to be Moffitt to get the W. I wish we could see more consistency and a little bit more from Skelly because I do think he has the tools, but I just don't trust him at this point. So I respect the man. I kind of like him as well because, man, he's into – those of you guys that are on Twitter, you see Skelly out there talking about MMA betting and, you know, UFC bets that he's made and picking fights and that sort of thing. So it's pretty cool when you see some of the UFC fighters cross over into the betting world that we're all a part of and interested in for sure. But outside of that, man, I mean, he's got to go out there and perform when he gets in the octagon. And like I said, to me, he's just been a little bit too shaky and inconsistent. So I for that reason alone, I'm going to go Moffitt's way. But let me just say this early on. There is a disclaimer, of course, I always say on every oddscast, our staff picks on MMAoddsbreaker.com that get posted late on fight day are going to be our official picks because this is a fight for me that I've been going back and forth on a little bit, but I'm leaning Moffitt's way. So the pick is Moffitt, but make sure you check out MMAoddsbreaker.com on fight day for our staff picks to get the final selections.
Yeah, these guys are just so evenly matched, and they both have very similar fighting styles. Skelly and Moffitt both have pretty strong wrestling bases. They both typically look to take fights to the floor. They both have pretty strong submission games as well on the ground in terms of looking for chokes. They both have some power on the feet. This is just a really, really interesting fight. Now, obviously, you know, Chaz Skelly has some issues. His performance against Jason Knight, I think he pushed it a little too hard. Trying to take Knight out, and then that was actually Knight's last UFC win before he went on a 4-fight losing streak in the octagon. And Knight was able to get a TKO victory over Skelly. And that's actually another cause for concern here is Skelly hasn't fought since then. So that's been a year and a half that he's been away from the octagon, dealing with some injuries and everything. So I'm definitely a little concerned about cage rust. Moffitt has definitely been much more active. He's fought 4 times already this year, including most recently that second round submission victory in August against Jacob Kilburn to earn his way to the UFC. Moffitt is definitely a talented fighter and, definitely not somebody you can sleep on here. Is he going to be able to take Chaz Skelly down? Is he going to be able to work that submission game? And I'm not quite sure. I mean, most people have not been able to do it. The only fighter that's really been able to take Skelly down has been Darren Elkins, and that's a guy with just a incredible motor and high energy. And while Moffitt does have a pretty good pace, I don't know if he'll be able to do that same thing. The one thing to consider, though, is that this fight is taking place in Denver, and Skelly does have a little bit of an issue slowing down in fights. With this being his first fight in 18 months and it being at high elevation, I'm definitely concerned about how Skelly's going to look in the third round. But overall, I think, the veteran experience of Skelly could definitely come into play here. I mean, the guy's fought in the UFC for a while now. And with Moffitt, this is, that UFC debut might have an adrenaline dump. So I'm very, very slightly leaning Chaz Skelly. I think that, he's shown some pretty good power on the feet and, he also is a talented wrestler with the chokes. And I don't know if, how Moffitt's going to react if, he's the one that gets put on the defensive. So I'm going to side with Skelly. I'm not that, convinced about it, but, and I'm not that confident with this pick, but I do think that experience will be a factor in this fight. So, this is not an easy UFC debut for Moffitt. by any stretch of the imagination. So I think that Skelly has just enough to get it done, and he's going to be my pick, at least for now. Now, moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have Ashley Yoder, who is 5-4, taking on Amanda Cooper, who is 4-4. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Cooper opened -165, the comeback on Yoder +125. Line flipped, and right now it's actually Yoder -155, the comeback on Cooper at +125. So early action coming in Yoder's way. Glaring stat, Yoder 4 wins by submission, Cooper 4 losses by submission, and her 4 official losses have all come by submission. And again, Yoder's 4 out of 5 wins have come by submission. So at first glance, a lot of people are going to bet just by weakness alone. I mean, you just looking at paper, I mean, it's obvious which way this fight should play out in most cases. And as silly as it sounds, sometimes something as basic as that is how it ends up going down. So that being said, I mean, you got to look at it a little bit closer. And Yoder is more than a submission fighter. She's getting better. She's got some length in this fight. She has some advantages in this fight. That's why I think the early action is probably right coming in Yoder's way. But Cooper does have some good boxing. She does have some power, even though she got caught, surprisingly, in her last fight against a grappler. As we all know, Mackenzie Dern blasted her and then, you know, had her way underground. But that being said, Cooper does have some solid boxing, and she is developing her ground game. Her takedown defense is improving. And, you know, other than her sub defense, like I said, being a little glaring, I mean, it is improving. Now, that is definitely still a weakness, and that's something that she can't afford to happen again against Yoder here. If Yoder gets a fight on the ground, I think Yoder has a huge advantage. So, again, something as simple as looking fights at paper – on paper, whatnot can sometimes dictate which way this fight's going to go and how it's going to play out. And in this particular spot, I think it's going to be a very competitive fight. I think it'll play out where both fighters have success on the feet. I think Yoder can mix things up a little bit better. I think she can mix in some kicks. I think she's a little bit taller, so she can utilize that tie plumb a little bit and have some success in the clinch. But Cooper, again, I think is just a little bit harder as far as the punches go that she's going to throw at her. She can maybe do a little bit more damage when she does connect. And like I said, if it hits the floor, I think it's going to be Yoder having an advantage. Even if she's off her back, Cooper's going to have to defend and be cautious that she doesn't get caught up in anything. So I think it has a lot of potential to be a split decision type of fight if it does hit the scorecards. But I think along the way, Yoder's probably going to find a spot and end up submitting Cooper and giving her 5th submission loss. So again, that's kind of why I started off this way. I think, you know, you have to look at it a lot closer than just on paper, but I mean, that's pretty telling in this spot here. So Yoder's strength is definitely Cooper's kryptonite. And I think where Cooper is strong, Yoder's actually not that bad. So stylistically, it's kind of a tougher fight for Cooper. So the early action again coming in Yoder's way should be correct. But I do expect it, like I said, to be cautious now where it's at now. You don't want to lay a ton of juice in this spot. So I think around, you know, like I said, -150, 160 is kind of a fair spot. But anything much more than that, stay away from this fight. Because again, Cooper, I think, is putting the work in. She knows she has to win this fight. Her back's up against the wall. She, you know, she wants to get a W to stay on the roster here. So it's going to be a tough fight. She's going to come to fight. I just have to side with Yoder from based on what we've seen and how the fight should play out. So the pick is Yoder to win.
Yeah, and another way to look at this fight is how they performed against their most recent opponent, which was Mackenzie Dern. Yoder had a very competitive fight against Dern. Dern had some difficulty getting the fight to the floor, and Yoder was outstriking her on the feet, actually bloodied up her nose pretty bad. And Cooper, while she's known for her striking, she actually got dropped by Dern and then finished on the ground. Yoder ended up losing a decision, I believe. So, yeah, they both lost, but Yoder was significantly better performance in defeat. And then that being said, as Nick mentioned, Yoder actually being a pretty talented ground fighter, compared to Cooper, who loses on the ground all the time, that's definitely something you have to factor in. But I think on the feet, while Cooper does have some pretty good boxing technique, Yoder has some serious size advantage in this fight. Yoder's got 5 inches in reach. She's 4 inches taller. She can fight long. She actually has a decent jab, not a great one, but her kicking game is actually pretty solid. So if Cooper is not crowding her, she could eat some serious kicks along the way as well. So I think Yoder's going to be in pretty good shape on the feet. She definitely has shown some improvements in her stand-up game. And then if and when this fight does go to the floor, Yoder should have a pretty big edge as well. Cooper's a fighter that, you know, she wins the fights that she should win against the really lower tier fighters like, you know, Angela Magana. I thought she looked pretty good against, Anna Elmos. You know, it was a close fight, but, Cooper got the job done against somebody that didn't have a lot of, experience on the ground. And, I was actually really impressed with Cooper in that fight. I thought that maybe she had a little bit more potential than she's shown, but she's also faced three talented ground fighters and in the UFC. And each time that she has, she's been submitted in the first round. So, I think that if Yoder does get this fight to the floor, Cooper is definitely going to be in big trouble. So, I think this fight will be a little bit more competitive because again, Cooper's losses have been to some of the best, ground fighters in the division. And Yoder isn't quite at that level, but I do think that Yoder is just the better fighter of the two, and she should get the job done. So my pick is going to be Ashley Yoder. Now, moving on to the main card in the lightweight division, we have Michael Trezano, who is 8-0, taking on Luis Peña, who is 5-0. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Peña minus 275, Trezano plus 195. That was the opener. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's minus 175 for Peña. The comeback on Trezano is down to plus 145. So action coming in Trezano's way. Early on, it was staying afloat and, you know, up over 2-1, almost 3-1 for Peña. I mean, obviously, Violent Bob Ross, as they call him, Peña, very popular fighter, a ton of hype surrounding him. Trezano, though, the Ultimate Fighter winner of that season that they were both on, so which was obviously recent, the Ultimate Fighter, I believe, 27 it was. That said, I mean, this is definitely a close fight. Close enough where a lot of sharp action actually came in on Trezano and took the line down to where it's at now. So it wasn't just public action hitting Trezano. There was a lot of sharp action coming in that way, and that's why the books adjusted as they did. And I think they're probably on the right track here because this fight is definitely a lot closer than the opening odds indicated and the current odds even indicate right now. This is more of a coin flip fight to me, in my opinion, here. Both these guys are very talented. Both these guys obviously undefeated, and both these guys are what we wanted to see kind of play out, or what we, you know, for that season, the Ultimate Fighter, that's what was the expectation. Peña unfortunately got hurt on the show and we weren't able to see this kind of play out. So we finally are here. In my opinion, Peña is just a little bit overrated. I mean, the guy is definitely a dangerous fighter. I think he's got some unexpected power on the feet. He's got a long frame, first of all, for the lightweight weight class, right? So he utilizes that. He does fight well behind the jab at times, and he does have some clean technique with his punches. I just think he's a tad bit slow, and he's a bit predictable with that. But when they land, they definitely do some damage. So I think Peña has, again, a little bit surprising power, in my opinion. On the ground, though, is where I think he does his best work. The guy, he doesn't have the best takedown defense. He can be put on his back, but man, you have to be cautious because he immediately starts going, trying to grab a limb, trying to grab your neck. And he's got these sneaky good chokes. So Peña is definitely a finisher when it comes to taking advantage and being opportunistic. We've been saying that at times on this podcast. And this is another situation where Peña, he finds something, he spots something that you're, you know, leaving an arm out, leaving your neck out. He's going to take advantage of it and try to finish you off. So that's what makes Peña dangerous. That's what makes him exciting. Yeah. He pushes a fairly high pace. I mean, he comes to fight, he comes to kill. So he is a fun fighter to watch. I understand why the fans get behind him, but Trezano, man, I mean, I've been nothing but impressed with him. His fight IQ, he's a very smart fighter. I think he's a very well-rounded fighter. I think if this fight plays out on the feet, I think Trezano's going to have a lot more success than people realize on the feet. I think if it goes to the ground, Trezano's probably going to end up on top of Peña on the ground. And I think his submission defense, he doesn't want to play that game too much on the ground, but he showed that his submission defense is good enough that he can get out of bad spots. He can withstand some submissions that are being thrown at him. Even in his last fight, you know, he was able to show some of that as well. So Trezano, I think, is a far more solid fighter than everybody is giving credit for here in this spot. And I think he's going to give Peña all he can handle, if not more. And I think he actually pulls this victory off. So I do agree with you, the sharp action that came in on Trezano in this spot. I think Trezano, again, if it hits the ground, I think he does not get subbed. I think he can dictate where this fight goes. I think he can have a little bit more success on the feet as well. So this is a closer fight to a pick 'em, in my opinion, than the current line indicates. I'm going to lean with Trezano to get the W here. I think it should be a fun fight, but I just think Trezano, it continues to be a little bit disrespected, and I think he's going to finally get some of that respect that he deserves after he gets a W over Pena here in this spot. So the pick is Trezano to get the win.
And I can completely see the Trezano pulling this out. It seems like, you know, this guy has that ability to drag fights into deeper waters, to grind things out. I mean, he's not the most exciting fighter on the planet, and I think that that has kind of turned people against him a little bit. But, you know, he's effective. He gets the job done. I mean, he's undefeated for a reason. You know, this is the matchup that I think fans wanted to see, the real Ultimate Fighter finale. But Pena on the show got hurt and then couldn't advance to the finale. We saw how he looked in his actual UFC debut on the finale, and I thought Pena looked pretty solid. I mean, his striking is definitely still has a ways to go. He does have a lot of power, but you know, he is definitely a little wild and crazy. And when he misses bad. So, Trezano could, actually take advantage of that if, Pena is way too overeager on the feet. Trezano could land some really nasty counters. He could duck a strike and take him down. Basically the way I see this fight playing out is if Pena is going to win, it's probably going to be by finish. I mean, this guy can put people away with his power on the feet, whether it's punching, whether it's kicking. And then he does have a really nasty ground game as well. And he can definitely submit people, whether he hurts them first and then takes them out with a submission on the ground, or if he can just get this fight to the floor, he could potentially submit Trezano as well. So I definitely feel like, you know, Pena can win this fight. It's just he's going to have to either hurt Trezano first or get a dominant position on the canvas. And that's not going to be easy. Trezano is a fighter with some pretty good defenses in terms of striking defense. Takedown defense is pretty good. So it will not be easy for Pena. But I do think that, you know, this is a guy, yeah, I think that maybe the hype is a little too much. But, I mean, the hype is there for a reason. He's exciting. This is a guy that puts people away. I don't think he's, gone to decision in his career yet. And against Trezano, while Trezano does have some good defenses, Pena does have the ability to, you know, kind of carve through those defenses as well. So I'm going to side with the hype this time around, and, I'm going to go with Luis Pena. I think that he can, either get, a dominant position on the ground and get the submission, or potentially he could clip Trezano along the way, although I think that that will be a little bit more difficult because Pena can be a little wild. So my pick is going to be Luis Pena. Now dropping down to the strawweight division, we have Macy Barber, who is 4-0, taking on late replacement Hannah Cyphers, who is 8-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Barber open -260, the comeback on Cyphers at +180. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's actually Barber at -420, the comeback on Cyphers +310. So action coming in Barber's way. I'm not surprised. She's a very popular fighter. Talk about hype. I mean, this girl is definitely a hyped prospect, and deservingly so. Only 20 years old, she was brought up as a complete mixed martial artist, training in all aspects of the game. And you can tell, I mean, she's a good striker. She has good wrestling. She has a good jiu-jitsu game. She has great fight IQ. She's only 20 years old. And the girl, I mean, sky's the limit. Another one of these prospects. Like I said, at 115 pounds, there's not too many girls right now that can handle her. And I think that the fight by fight, we're going to continue to see her do good things. And the UFC is doing a smart thing here by matching her up against an opponent like Cyphers. I think this is actually a tougher test than Stevenson was. Stevenson's not a fighter, but I think that, you know, Cyphers stepping in on short notice here, outside of that aspect of things, I think Cyphers physically is just tough as nails. I mean, she's the type of fighter that comes at you, just pushes a high pace, gets in your face, stuffs takedowns, and tries to just beat you up. I mean, that's the type of fighter she is. She's powerful. She's aggressive. She has good clinch work. She's a grinder, and she's in your face, and she's only getting better fight by fight. She's faced some solid competition. I mean, if you look at some of the win-loss records of some of her opponents, it's probably not as fair as what she's actually been in there with. I mean, some of those fighters are better than what their records indicate now at this point. So Cyphers has faced some decent competition, better than what it kind of looks on paper, basically, is what I'm trying to spit out there. So she's going to be prepared for somebody like Barber, but she's not going to be able to keep up with Barber. I think Barber, even on the feet, she'll be able to hang with Cyphers. I think Barber's smart enough that she knows if she's having some problems with Cyphers standing up, she's going to want to take this to the ground. If she's not able to get it to the ground right away, she'll find a way to take her back. She's, again, another opportunistic fighter that's very slick, very smart fight IQ, and Barber gets it done. So, I mean, not much more to say about this fight. I think Cyphers is going to be game. She's going to be a tough fighter, but Barber's going to find a way to finish this fight as well. So I expect it's probably going to happen on the ground. Cyphers is going to put up a fight, but eventually Barber's going to get her way and continue her rise in the UFC division. So I'll tell you what, I mean, an exciting fighter, and the UFC has a potential star here. If they keep on matching her properly and kind of build her up and, you know, get her confidence going and get everybody aboard the Barber train, I think they're going to be very satisfied with where it ends up, because this girl could definitely wear gold down the line. So I'm a fan. I think she's going to, like I said, perform well here and get another W and highlight real fashion probably. So the pick is Barber to get the win over Cyphers.
Yeah, Macy Barber is definitely that super young, well-rounded prospect in the women's strawweight division. Definitely somebody worth getting excited about. I thought that she looked extremely polished against Jamie Colleen, who is a veteran that's been around the sport for a long time, that's known for having some pretty good knockout power and a decent submission game. And Barber just ran through her and was beating her in every facet of the fight. I don't think she lost 1 second of that contest, and definitely earned the UFC invite. And at just 20 years old, sky is the limit for this girl, because she's a very technically sound striker, good movement, good distance, just does everything well, and then also has the takedowns and the ground game to match. So I definitely think that this is a girl that could be somebody that you're talking about, as Nick mentioned, you know, title around the waist down the line. Against Cyphers, yeah, I think this should be a blowout. Barber was supposed to face Maya Stevenson, but she dropped out pretty late notice, and Cyphers is filling in here on about a week or less. It's a little more than that, it's a couple weeks. But still, I think this is going to be a really tough matchup for her. Cyphers does have some power. You know, she's finished her last couple opponents by TKO. She's been on a nice little win streak here. But every time that she's faced somebody that was a UFC level, that's actually fought in the UFC before, she's lost. And while Cyphers does have some power on the feet, I don't think that her ground game is that particularly good. And if Barber wants to, I think she can take this fight to the floor and dominate. And I think Barber should be able to win the stand-up exchanges as well, although that is a little bit more dangerous. But yeah, I think Barber wins this fight however way she wants to, and I expect her to start her UFC career off with the victory. So Macy Barber is definitely my pick. Now, moving up to the lightweight division, we have Benil Dariush, who is 14-4-1, taking on Thiago Moises, who is 10-2. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Dariush opened -190, the comeback on Moises at +150. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it is actually Dariush coming in as a favorite at -150, the comeback on Moises at +120. So line margins have tightened up, a little bit more action coming in Moises' way. Not surprised, man. I tell you what, Dariush is one of my favorite fighters. I mean, as far as the lightweight division goes and what he's been able to kind of show at times in the UFC, but I'm saying at times because, man, I'm not sure what happened to him. The guy has a complete skill set where, to the point where, man, his striking, he could beat you on the feet. I mean, he's faced some really solid strikers in the UFC, and he's performed relatively well. That chin, of course, is definitely his kryptonite, and his conditioning at times as well has been kind of sketchy. But, man, I mean, offensively, he could definitely do some damage with his kicking game, with his boxing. He's a very good fighter. He's got underrated wrestling. I mean, he could take you down and he could submit you on the ground. He could control you. I mean, the guy has so many ways to win. I think he was really on his way to eventually earning a title shot. That's the kind of skill set and the kind of potential Dariush had. But then we've seen some performances. And I mean, that chin has let him down, but not just his chin. If you look back at the Chiesa fight after the first round that he looked really good. I mean, that second round was a totally, I don't know, a weird spot. He definitely gassed. He definitely faded a little bit. It was just a complete letdown, and Chiesa was able to take advantage and finish him there. He should not be losing fights like that. Even though Chiesa is a very good fighter, I get it, but I mean, it was just stylistically a terrible fight for him, and he lost it. So he's just been inconsistent. He's been another one of these guys that you expect to perform at a high level, and at times it's either his conditioning or his chin that lets you down, and you can't depend on him. And that's the issue here with Darius, because this is a very winnable fight. Moises is one of these guys that is another a very good up-and-coming fighter. He's only 23 years old. He's well-rounded. He excels mostly on the ground more than anywhere else. I mean, he has a very good jiu-jitsu game, which matches up with Darius. So you would think that it's a scratch on the ground, right? And then on the feet, I think offensively, Darius is probably a little bit above Moises at this point. But I mean, defensively, I don't trust it. I mean, Moises is definitely getting better. If you look at his last fight, I mean, he's another one of these guys that I was talking about with Access TV fights. He's a veteran, of course, of the LFA. So he's performed at a high level outside of the UFC. And then, of course, he had that contender series fight, recently, the Brazilian contender series, and he had a highlight reel win there as well. He ended up getting a very impressive finish, at least I should say. So, and his confidence in his striking was evident. I mean, even going into that fight though, against his opponent, I mean, you could tell he knew that he was going to exploit his opponent's weakness, which was a stand up. And Moises went out there and looked like, I mean, a very good striker in that spot. So he is getting better. He's improving in that aspect. He's improving his confidence, and he's no slouch at all. Now, thankfully for Darius, Moises doesn't have that one-punch knockout power that Hernandez hit him with in his last fight. I mean, Alexander Hernandez is just a different animal as far as pure knockout power on the feet. So Moises doesn't really present that kind of issue, but I don't trust Darius's chin still. Moises definitely has enough power to clip that chin and put him out. I wouldn't be surprised if it does happen, but this should be a little bit of a safer fight. And if that's the case, Darius could get the win here, because I think he can end up in top position on the ground. Moises has been put on his back. He has been controlled in fights as well. I don't think Darius gets subbed if he has Moises on his back in this spot here. I think the only way Darius could lose by sub in this spot, maybe if he gives up his back, similar to, again, Chiesa fight or something of that nature. But I'm going back and forth on this fight, honestly, and I understand why the early action came in on Moises. I just don't trust Darius at this point. I think it's very hard to trust him, even though he is the better fighter. He is the more experienced fighter, and he should get the W here. So with that said, again, check out our staff picks for my final pick, because I'm on the fence with this fight, but I'll lean Darius, I guess, slightly in this spot here, but it's not a confident pick, and my money would not go on Darius at this point. We need to see him be more consistent. We need to see his chin hold up for a few fights at least. We need to see his conditioning hold up and get back on track a little bit to believe that he's back and he's on the right path. But until I see that, I'm not going to believe it. So this is a very winnable fight for Moises, and I wouldn't be surprised if he does get it done. But as far as a pure pick goes, I have to side with what should happen, and Darius should get the win here. So that's my slight lean, and that's my pick.
Thiago Moises is a very young, up-and-coming, promising fighter with some very slick victories on his record. I mean, the guy has some really impressive submission ability. And on the feet, while he doesn't have that much power, as Nick mentioned, he actually does have some decent technique. He's pretty quick on the feet as well. So while he doesn't have a ton of power, Darius doesn't have a very good chin at all. And maybe it doesn't take that much power to take Darius out at this point. That being said, you know, it wasn't that long ago that Darius was, you know, a top 15, top 10 lightweight that was, you know, potentially knocking on the door for, you know, title contention. And then, yeah, he slipped off in a big way in his most recent fights, going, you know, 0-2-1 in his last three, getting completely smashed in his last fight against Hernandez. But, you know, Darius still has those skills. So, it just, we'll see how he performs here. I mean, this is going to be a really big test to see what Darius has left, because, I mean, as shot as he has looked in his last couple fights, you got to remember, he's still just 29 years old. Moises is 23. I mean, Darius is a guy with still a very talented striking ability. He has good power, decent kicks, and an absolute world-class submission game. So Moises' biggest strength is actually probably going to be countered here with how strong Darius is on the canvas. Darius should definitely be the better wrestler of the two. So I expect if it goes to the floor, Darius is probably going to be the one in top position. So what it boils down to is, can Moises use that speed and quickness to land some good shots on the feet and hurt Darius? And, or also, can Darius, get outlasted in this fight? Because again, with Chaz Skelly, Darius does have a history of conditioning issues. I mean, you go back, Michael Chiesa fight, Darius was crushing Chiesa in the first round and then slows down in the second round, gives up his back, and Chiesa actually submits him. And Darius has slowed down, in the Edson Barbosa fight. Shot in for too many takedowns, got a little too obvious on his tell, and then Barbosa blasts him with a knee on the way in. So I do think that there's going to be definite possibilities for Moises to take this, especially if, Darius is still, on that decline. But you also got to factor in that, Darius, those losses were to some really legitimate fighters in the lightweight division. And we don't know if Moises is at that level or not. So, I think, with the fact that Darius can utilize his wrestling, and he's done this before, like against good ground fighters like Jim Miller, if Darius can kind of go back to that and get the takedowns and secure top position, I think that he'll be in decent shape. My biggest concern is the chin, obviously, and the fact that it is in Denver, and if Darius gets tired, maybe Moises can make something happen late. So my pick is Beneil Darius, but I'm definitely concerned about the high elevation. Now, moving down to the women's bantamweight division, we have Raquel Pennington, who is 9-7, taking on Germaine de Randamie, who is 7-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
De Randamie open -175, the comeback on Pennington +135. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, De Randamie -180, the comeback on Pennington +150. So solid opener, it's holding steady. Two-way action coming in this fight. If this was a couple years ago, I think in De Randamie's prime, this would be a much higher line. And I'm saying that because, De Randamie hasn't had a ton of fights in the UFC, and it's unfortunate because in my opinion, she is one of the best female strikers in MMA that I've ever seen. And I already see a bit of a decline in her. I know that again, she's actually performed relatively well, even in her last fight. I mean, she's coming off a title win over Holly Holm, and she of course got stripped of that title by the UFC because she didn't want to fight Cyborg or, all the circumstances surrounding that sort of thing, which is disappointing as well. But it tells you what kind of skill she has, but I'm saying she's a little bit on a decline because I could tell her defense is slowing down a little bit. More strikes are getting through. She's getting rocked a little bit. She's getting hurt in fights a little bit more. She's tough. So, obviously she hasn't been in a tremendous amount of trouble, but she is definitely not as defensively sound as she once was or as solid as in absorbing some of that punishment. She's, I believe 34 years old now. So she's definitely on, kind of a decline part of her career. She's been out for almost 2 years. And I'm saying all this again because I'm disappointed. I don't think the UFC utilized her, as fully as they could. I think she is such a talented fighter and she's worked so hard on keeping, the fight upright and keeping from getting on the ground. Her takedown defense has improved by leaps and bounds. And I was personally one that wanted to see her match up with Cyborg. And again, in her prime, I think she would have gave Cyborg all she could handle. I'm not sure she could absorb some of that punishment these days as she is hitting that decline spot. And obviously Cyborg hits like a truck. So, like I said, I would have liked to see how that fight would have actually played out because technically speaking, I think that would have been a fun fight. But that being said, she has another tough fight here against Pennington. Pennington, obviously we've seen her recently, fight for the title and she got beat up, didn't fare too well, obviously, in that spot. But Pennington is another fighter that's tough as nails. She brings it. Her striking is obviously underrated to the point where, in most cases, she can outstrike her opponents. Now, against a fighter like Nunes, that wasn't the case. Of course, she was, fighting again for the title and fighting one of the best female strikers out there in Nunes as well. So she did get beat up in that fight, absorbed a ton of punishment. But this is a 3-round fight. This isn't a 5-round fight. This is a different situation. I don't think De Rondami doesn't quite hit as hard as obviously Nunes does, but she is pretty technical and she will land on Pennington and she will probably pick Pennington apart in this spot. So, Pennington's aggression and her toughness is going to make this a tough fight. I think Pennington is going to look to push forward, slow this fight down, get De Rondami against the cage, maybe look for a takedown. But I think this fight does probably play out where it stays up on the feet and then De Rondami does land, you know, more often throughout the fight and gets the W here. It should be clear who the better striker here is, but I think Pennington is still going to be a tough out with all of that being said as well. So, but she did take a beating. It is interesting, to see how she looks after that beating. She took to Nunes coming, you know, into this fight as well. So there's a lot of, you know, question marks to be answered here with De Rondami's layoff. You know, where she at right now in her career, how, you know, everything across the board with Pennington and, you know, that beating she just took, like I said. So a lot to look at, a lot to kind of scratch your head about in this one as well. But when it comes down to it, like I said, at the current price right now, I mean, you're kind of getting a steal because there's no question who the better fighter is. So anything under 2-1 on De Rondami is probably some value, but I do think it's going to be competitive. I do think Pennington's going to push a tough pace and a high, you know, be in your face type of fight. And I think it'll make it at least interesting if it does go to the scorecards where the judges will probably score it a little bit closer than it probably should be. So with that said, be careful if you're betting it. And it's interesting to see how these ladies are going to look. But my pick is De Rondami. I think it should be clear, like I said, who the better striker here is. And I think she does keep it upright. So she gets a W here.
And I'm with De Rondami as well. I mean, she is just such an incredibly talented kickboxer with excellent technique. And you got to remember, you know, she hasn't lost in years and years. You know, she lost the title, but she was stripped of the title because she had some injuries to her hand. There were some rumors that she refused to fight Cyborg. So they ended up stripping her of the title and then Cyborg ended up fighting for the vacant title. And then they never did end up fighting. And now she's back at 135 pounds. And Rondami is, you know, she's definitely just a way better overall technical striker than Raquel Pennington. She has 4 inches in reach on Pennington. And she obviously has just that elite striking background hailing from the Netherlands. I think, Pennington's going to be in big trouble if this fight stays upright. You know, Rondami has more power. You know, Rondami has the technique. She has the reach. Maybe Pennington has a little bit with the pace she can push, but, you know, I just don't think that she can keep up with Rondami if this fight stays upright. Especially as Nick mentioned after, you know, she really took a beating in that last fight against Nunes. You know, she won it out of that fight and then they sent her out in the 5th round just to get finished in the 5th. So, you know, that, who knows what kind of toll that took on her. You know, cause she'd never really been, you know, taken that kind of punishment in a fight before. And she's fought some of the best fighters in the world. Now Pennington does have an advantage in this fight. If you, look, you know, she does have some submissions on her record. I was really impressed with the way, you know, that she's attacked and found openings against fighters when, like Jessica Andrade, she picked up a submission in the 2nd round against Andrade when she was still fighting at 135 pounds. And she also had that kind of bulldog choke submission against Ashley Evans-Smith, ended up choking her unconscious for a victory. So, if there is a path to victory, it is with, a opportunistic submission from Pennington. I mean, she might not even have to get this fight to the floor. She could just, grab a clinch and maybe try to, you know, grab, Rondami's back standing and then just attack with a choke or something. Cause, you know, Rondami's submission defense is, and defense off of her back is by far her biggest weakness. She has done a really good job, training and working to avoid being taken down, but I still think a submission defense is definitely the path to attack here. And, there could be an opportunity for Pennington to, strike in that department. But as long as this fight stays standing, Rondami should be able to control the distance. I think that she'll be peppering Pennington with, good jabs and, some long range kicks. And I think that she'll just be frustrating Pennington over the course of 3 rounds unless Pennington can close the distance. So my pick is going to be Jermaine De Rondami. I think she does, even though she is 34 years old. She's coming off of basically a almost 2-year layoff and might be on a decline. I still think she's got more than enough left in the tank to outwork Raquel Pennington here and potentially put herself in the title mix at 135 pounds. So Randami is my pick. Now, moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have Donald Cerrone, who is 33-11 with one no contest, taking on Mike Perry, who is 12-3. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Cerrone minus 130, Perry minus 110. That line didn't last too long. Right now, it's Perry minus 205, the comeback on Cerrone, plus 165 over at BetDSI. So more action coming in Perry's way. It did actually get a little bit higher. Now we're starting to see action come back in on Cerrone as well. Tough one. I mean, even a tough opening line to set. I mean, Perry obviously is the kind of the young blood coming in, trying to, you know, maintain, get on a steady roll and prove that he belongs, you know, towards the top tier of the welterweights and eventually, you know, getting that spot where he can earn a title shot. If he could get past Cerrone, that would be a huge step in that, you know, right direction for him as well. So he's got a lot to prove still. But at times, I mean, Perry has definitely shown some flashes where he does have the skill. He does have the power. Of course, he's an exciting fighter. I mean, he's got the personality where a lot of fans get behind him and they like, you know, like to hear him talk. They like to watch him fight because he's an exciting fighter. He lays it all on the line when he gets out there and he comes to fight for sure. So there's a lot of good things to like about Perry, but here he's outclassed kind of in all sorts of areas in this fight. I mean, Cerrone is definitely the more well-rounded mixed martial artist. He has by far more experience in this spot as well. Again, tools, skill set. I mean, you name it, Cerrone's got the advantage over Perry. Perry probably has the speed and the pure punching power advantage right now over Cerrone, but Cerrone, he can knock you out with his kicks. Obviously, he can knock you out with his punches as well. He could submit you. He could take you down. I mean, Cerrone, fight IQ, he's a smart fighter as well. There's just a lot to like about him. But of course, I mean, at age 35, I believe right now, that's what he is. I mean, the decline is definitely there. He's on a bit of a losing streak overall. I guess quality fighters, though, that should be mentioned. I mean, he's only losing to top tier fighters. So you got to give him credit for that. And Perry, we'll see. Is he one of those guys? I mean, you know, Brian and I were kind of talking about this off air as well. I mean, it seems like Cerrone's only losing to the top tier guys, and Perry really isn't in that category as of yet. So, Cerrone, this is a winnable fight for him still. I think he's going to have a bit of a chip on his shoulder as well. I mean, we all know that Perry's training at the Jackson camp right now. Cerrone recently left the Jackson camp and, you know, he's training in at his cowboy ranch or whatnot as well. So there's a little bit of a rivalry there that's taking place, a little bit of bitterness for sure from both parties. So I think Cerrone's going to have that kind of chip on his shoulder, and that's going to probably fare him well in this spot here. You know, he's going to come to fight. He's tough in most cases to finish. I mean, it's his body that I think is susceptible more than anything else to him getting finished a lot of times when it's on the feet. So that said, I think he'll tough it out here, and I think that Perry, even though Perry does mix things up, I mean, he'll dig into the body at times as well. I think this is going to be a back-and-forth type of fight, and I think it's a fight that maybe Perry doesn't go out there and just, you know, destroy Cerrone right away. And if that's the case, Cerrone's going to have his spots and have his moments to definitely have a lot of good things happen for him in this fight as well. So another fight that it's very tough to pick. I'm going to slightly lean towards Cerrone because I do think that at this point, I mean, he's still levels above Perry as far as overall skill set left that he has right now currently, and he has a little bit left in the tank, enough to get him by in this fight as well. So looking forward to this fight. I think it's going to be interesting. Like I said, I want to see if Perry can, you know, dispose or dispatch a Cerrone and just put him out there and show that the decline is real for him and get a huge, huge win on his resume to take that forward step and get that confidence and then, you know, get back on track to the point where we're seeing Perry roll off 4 or 5 wins in devastating fashion. That would be great to see for Perry as well. So a lot of interesting, you know, things I want to see play out in this fight as well. I just think Cerrone is just still farther ahead and unfortunately for Perry, I think he's going to probably get beat here in this spot. So the pick is Cerrone to pull off the upset win in what should be a very entertaining fight.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that long ago that Donald Cerrone won 12 out of 13 fights and was an absolute top contender at both the lightweight and welterweight divisions. But yeah, he's been on a bit of a rough stretch lately, losing 4 out of 5. And as Nick mentioned, you know, against some of the best in the division, I mean, Robbie Lawler, Jorge Masvidal, Darren Till, Leon Edwards. I mean, those are all guys in the top 15, if not top 10 in, the welterweight division. And the one win was over, you know, a guy that wasn't in the top 10 or top 15 in Yancy Medeiros. So the real question is Mike Perry ready to move to primetime a little bit? You know, Cerrone is, it definitely seems like on the decline. You know, he's not quite as fast as he used to be. I mean, he's still dangerous. He still has power. He still has, you know, some pretty good leg kicks and everything and head kicks. But he's 35 years old. He's been in a lot of wars. He went on a crazy stretch of taking so many fights in such a short amount of time. And that does wear on you. So, and then now you factor in kind of the controversy here with the two fighters that were out of Greg Jackson's gym competing against each other, and it kind of splits the gym a little bit. And, you know, there's a lot of hard feelings both ways. So there's a lot of drama with this fight. And Mike Perry, while I don't think that he is, you know, a top 15 welterweight, I will say that he is showing some improvements. I mean, we saw out of him that last fight, he wasn't out of control. He was composed against Paul Felder. He landed some good strikes. Felder, you know, had an injury at one point with, you know, with his arm, and Perry didn't go crazy trying to just knock his head off and leaving himself exposed. Perry just had a workmanlike, really solid overall performance in a very fun, exciting fight. And I think, his defense has improved. Perry, obviously does still have a ton of power. He's an accurate striker. And against Cerrone, I think, while Cerrone actually is slightly longer with, his reach and height, you know, Perry is, you know, definitely the more natural welterweight of the two. There's no way I think Perry could ever fight at a lightweight. You know, he's a little bit more filled out, a little stronger, might have a little bit more pop in his hands. So, both guys have a bit of durability concerns. You know, Perry really hasn't shown it that much in the UFC. It was more actually outside the UFC that he's had some problems getting dropped and everything. But, the biggest advantage Cerrone has in this fight is probably the ground game for sure. It's just, will he be able to take it to the ground? You know, Perry doesn't have amazing takedown defense, but Cerrone really isn't a great wrestler either. A lot of times when fights go to the ground, it's because Cerrone hurt somebody standing and then jumped on something, or maybe somebody shot in for a takedown against Cerrone and then he put him in a triangle choke or whatever. So, I think this fight, as long as, you know, there aren't a bunch of knockdowns all over the place, and there definitely could be, it's probably going to be staying standing for the most part. So, I'm slightly leaning towards Mike Perry, believe it or not. And I am a guy that has been fading Mike Perry repeatedly. You know, I picked Alan Joban against him, earlier in Perry's run. I've picked against him repeatedly, but I think that at this point, Cerrone is slowing down enough that I think Perry can catch him. And, Perry's power, is very dangerous. And, with this being a 3-round fight and Cerrone being a notorious slow starter, I think, Perry, could take advantage of that and could really hurt him early. So my pick is going to be Mike Perry. I think that he potentially could win a decision here, could also knock Donald Cerrone out. So Mike Perry is my pick. Now moving on to the main event of the evening in the featherweight division, we have the Korean Zombie Chan Sung Jung, who is 14-4, taking on Yair Rodriguez, who is 11-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Jung open -300, the comeback on Rodriguez +220. Right now, looking over BetDSI, it's Jung -125, the comeback on Rodriguez -105. So +220 to -105, a huge drop in the line. And I think it's obviously more accurately priced right now where the line is currently sitting, because this is going to be a fun fight. I know Rodriguez is stepping in on short notice. You know, he's taking Frankie Edgar's place, and I think this is going to kind of be a more exciting fight in a lot of ways. I know we all wanted to see Jung and Frankie Edgar, of course, but I think stylistically, the way Jung and Rodriguez match up, it's going to be fireworks. I mean, there's no question about it. Both these guys are well-rounded fighters, but both these guys like to stand and bang, probably more so than anything else. Now, both these guys are capable of submitting their opponents on the ground. Jung has pulled off some crazy submissions in the octagon so far. But the only problem with Jung is, of course, I mean, we got to point it out right away. He's been out for almost 2 years again. And before that, I believe he was out 4 years. So I know he's had his military duties and he's, you know, he's had to have some time off or whatnot. And it wasn't really a lot of that wasn't his choice. But that being said, I mean, that much rust is definitely a factor. Even in the Bermudez fight where he went out there and won in the first round and in his return, he looked great doing so. But the problem is, I mean, he didn't. I shouldn't say he looked great doing so, because actually he didn't look so great doing so. He finally caught Bermudez's chin and put him out there. But that performance, you know, wasn't the most impressive from Jung, but he did it. He did get the job done. I mean, it was impressive him knocking Bermudez out and then, you know, getting the W. Now against Rodriguez though, Rodriguez doesn't have the chin of Bermudez. Rodriguez is definitely a tough guy. I think his defense is a lot better as well. I think this is going to be a back and forth type of fight, and he has a lot more problems to be careful about in Rodriguez. Rodriguez is definitely an unorthodox striker. He can beat you with his kicking ability. Jung in the past has been caught with a kick, actually. If you go all the way back to Roop, I know it's been a long time now, but he was able to actually catch Jung and do some damage and hurt him and win a fight by a head kick. So Rodriguez has those type of tools that can present a lot of problems for Jung. Jung has more pure knockout power. I think, you know, Jung obviously in his hands, he definitely has some dynamite. He can connect and catch Rodriguez and do some damage along the way. I think Jung can probably get top position on the ground here as well. But more so than not, these guys like to, like I said, mix things up, but they like to stand and bang. That's why I think this is going to be a fun fight. There's no question about it. These guys also, I think at times can be a little bit stubborn and just kind of get in a firefight. And if that's the way it plays out, I mean, it's a toss up fight. So it is a very close to a pick'em type of fight. And those of you guys that gobbled up that line earlier, Rodriguez plus 220, hats off to you, because you definitely got some value, win or lose in this spot. But I do think Rodriguez has the tools to win this fight. I guess the rust factor more than anything else. I mean, I wish we could have seen Jung and Bermudez play out a little bit longer. I wish we would have had another fight in between here to see what Jung is definitely like these days, you know, compared to what he was before, because he, again, has all the tools. He always finds a way to make fights exciting and fun and entertaining and whatnot. So Jung is definitely a fighter that a lot of us want to see continue to perform and perform at a high level. I just think stylistically, this is a tough fight. So another back and forth type of fight, but I'll go with Rodriguez. I think his skill set and his unorthodox striking style is going to probably do him good in this fight. And I think that, with that technique, he could do some damage and eventually, possibly catch Jung along the way and put him out. So Rodriguez is the pick and probably inside the distance as it goes.
The Korean Zombie is my all time favorite fighter. I will get that out of the way right now. I mean, this guy, every fight that he has ever been in, something amazing has happened for the most part. I mean, the debut in the WEC was one of my favorite fights of all time, that sloppy brawl with Leonard Garcia. Even when he got head kicked and knocked out, that was just a crazy knockout against George Roop. Then you factor in the twister submission against Leonard Garcia. I think the only time that's ever happened. The 6-second knockout against Mark Hominick. One of my favorite fights of all time against Dustin Poirier. And then finally he returns after that long stint with the Korean Army and then gets a knockout win over Dennis Bermudez. So, you know, there's just been so many great highlights to his career. I mean, every time that he fights, something crazy happens. But, he is a fighter that has been so inactive. He had that stint in the Korean military. I mean, that he fought for the title against Aldo in 2013. Then he basically had to wait over 3 years, finally fights Dennis Bermudez in February of 2017. Wasn't looking that great, but then landed a really nice shot against Bermudez, who doesn't have a great chin, and put him away. And then he hasn't fought again since then because he got injured again. So he's basically fought one time in the last 5 years, which is just, it's just so frustrating for somebody that I've enjoyed watching so much. And against Yair Rodriguez, I think, Jung is going to be in a little bit of trouble here. I mean, Rodriguez is so quick. And while Rodriguez at one point, you know, it was just all flash and really not a lot of substance. He's turned a lot of those flashy attacks into real dangerous attacks that he can land and do damage with. He can finish people now with these crazy spinning attacks he likes to throw. Rodriguez is definitely one of the most unorthodox strikers in the division, and it's really tough to prepare for. I think while Jung does have some really good power in his hands, unless Rodriguez decides to just stay in the pocket and trade, it's not going to be really an easy opportunity for Jung to land those strikes, because Rodriguez is going to be coming at him from all kinds of weird angles. He's going to be coming at him from a distance. And realistically, the best chance that Jung has is if this fight does go to the floor, because you know, Chan Sung Jung has an extremely good ground game. You saw it in you know, the twister submission against Garcia. You saw it when he outgrappled Dustin Poirier and ended up getting a Darce choke submission in the fourth round of that fight. So, you know, this guy has a very, very impressive submission skill set. It's just he doesn't really take fights to the floor consistently. I mean, he can do it, but I think that Rodriguez will be able to keep this fight upright if he is, you know, using that speed and distance properly. Jung does have a dangerous top control game, though, and Rodriguez, in his lone serious UFC loss to Frankie Edgar in that last fight, you know, Edgar did utilize wrestling and top control and, you know, really put a beating on Rodriguez. And we haven't seen Rodriguez since. So this is his first fight bouncing back from that, and it's in a main event in five rounds in Denver. And like I've mentioned before with a couple other fighters, Dariush and Skelly, Rodriguez does have a little bit of history with gassing. Granted, it was early in his UFC run, but basically he would win the first two rounds and then slow down in the third round and usually give it away. So if that happens here, I mean, he's got two more rounds to go. He has fought for five rounds against Alex Caceres, and it looked like he's starting to put things together and not slow down as much in the first couple rounds, because he isn't wasting his energy as much with a really ineffective attacks. He's a little bit more methodical with the crazy unorthodox stuff. So I think as long as Rodriguez doesn't tire himself out, I think he'll be in pretty good shape. And I think, you know, Jung can be hit. I think Jung is going to be the slower, more methodical fighter. You know, Jung is going to be looking to land that big power strike on the feet. And obviously, you know, with all that time off that Jung's had, all the injuries he's had, I think that that's going to leave a lot more opportunity for Rodriguez, who is, you know, younger, faster, quicker, and much more diverse of a striker. So I think, Rodriguez gets the job done here. The main thing here is just what happens if he slows down. So, Yair is going to be my pick, though, at the end of the day. So that'll do it for a full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 139. If we have any free plays to give out, make sure to follow at MMA OB Premium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.